What's up, man?
Welcome to another Give Us the Launch Codes. Got another interview lined up.
Oh, nice. I liked your last two, man. I can't wait to hear about this interview.
Yeah, this is from a friend of mine named Matt. You might find him on Twitch. He goes by the username SweetBoyMatt3, although he's hoping to buy the handle so that he could drop the 3.
Sure.
But he calls himself a broadcast engineer, so he's worked a lot with like television and other kind of live streaming type video, news and sports. But he also plays Pokemon games online.
Alrighty.
Very interesting career, and we had a lot to talk about.
All right, let's hear it. I can't wait.
Hello, everyone. I am here with Matthew Prince, also known as Sweet Boy Matt 3 on Twitch. Did I get that right?
Yeah.
And you are a broadcast engineer as well as a Twitch streamer, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So we'll talk about those things today. First, I want to talk about what is a broadcast engineer?
So I've been using that title more often lately, just as my skill set sort of evolved in what I do. But basically, so the main skill I do, or the main career I do in television, is technical directing. I'm a technical director. And basically what that is imagine you're watching a live TV show, like you're watching like American Idol live, or you're watching the Super Bowl, something like that. And you know how the cameras switch? It'll like cut to a different camera and then graphics will be inserted. That's me. If a camera change, it's because I press the button to do so. If a graphic is inserted, it's because I press the button to do so. I basically, similar to a film or a pre-taped, you know, television or film has an editor, the technical director is like the live editor. Like, I'm cutting cameras live. I'm telling the cameras where to go. I'm telling them, sometimes I'm a director and a TD. But most of the time, I'm working in an environment where I have a director. They tell me what camera to cut to, and I cut to it. I'm live cutting a live TV show. Lately, I've been using the title broadcast engineer a little bit more as my skill set increases. Now I'm at the point where not only can I cut cameras for you live, can I edit your show live, I can also build the infrastructure and the video environment in which it allows you to go live. Like, I can show up with the equipment. If you have cameras, I can bring them into my system. I can run all the cables. I can make sure your internet is working great, and then we will go live.
What have you worked in specifically regarding directing and technical directing? Is it like the news? Have you done sports? What's your resume there?
It's a lot of different things. I started my career right out of college, and I went into a news station in Boston, WHDH TV in Boston. And my first job right out of college, I was a entry-level studio technician, which the way that path went was we would start operating RoboCams, and then you would work your way into video shading and playback. If we had clips, you know, you'd play them, you'd make sure graphics are in the correct monitors and all stuff like that. And then we were in a position where that news station at the time, this is about 10 years ago at this point, that news station was an NBC affiliate, but they were breaking up. NBC wanted to have their own, you know, owned and operated station. WHTH wanted to operate their own thing. So they split up and they are now an independent news station. And at that moment, there was an opportunity where they, now that they were not constrained by NBC's schedule anymore and not having to do, you know, cutting away to NBC shows and their programming and sports programming and everything like that, they were going to expand. They were going to have more hours of news. And I, having been a technical director in college and done it, you know, in my college's TV studio and really enjoying that, I went to the boss's office and said, hey, I know I'm young, but there's an opportunity here. You guys are expanding. I want a technical direct and I know the show really well. I promise you, like, you know, I know it's a risk to take a chance on a guy as young as me. I was like 22, but I you know, it'll be worth it. I'm a fast learner. I really want to do this. So they gave me a shot and it was very successful. I TD'd there for 2 years, doing some of the primetime news things, programs. I did Blizzard coverage, which is still to this day, Blizzard coverage in New England is still one of the hardest gigs I've ever done because I have 12 remote shots. Every single one of them is white, and they say, go to Worcester. And I don't know which of those 12 cameras is Worcester because I wrote down a list, and you got to be fast. So that's still some of the hardest stuff I've done. I did Patriots and other Boston sports teams, their victory parades, because we won a lot during that time. We don't win as much anymore. So that's
well,
okay.
We all remember.
That was a challenging gig too. So my most challenging jobs were my first gig right out of college, and then I moved to LA, and since then I've done a variety of gigs. The main one in Los Angeles has been I am the broadcast director at Santa Anita Park for their horse racing seasons. I've been doing that for about 7 years, and that's an environment where I am technical directing, which is cutting the cameras, as well as, you know, being the show caller, broadcast director, where I'm telling all the cameras, hey, I need you to be here. I need this camera to swing left. I need this camera to focus on this horse, all that stuff. So it's a very busy day. It's primarily been, in the most recent years, a balance between some news, a lot of sports, and some more DIY social media content, which has been more what I've been into lately and where the work has been taking me lately with the state of the industry. So I've been investing more time into that lately.
Going more into the DIY social media content, because I see all sorts of things on social media, from still images to videos for all sorts of purposes. What do you center on with that?
Yeah, so kind of what's making me go there is sort of the state of the industry, with a lot of studios are moving things either to Atlanta or overseas to Ireland right now. So there's just not a lot of studio content right now. So I've been investing more time into engineering and working on more DIY creator-led content. I think some good examples of that have been a couple clients I have, he's, you know, become a good friend of mine. He has his own production company and I jump on as an engineer, and he does a wide variety of things. I've done everything from the live stream of the first commercially built supersonic jet. We did that at the beginning of this year. That was crazy. We had a Starlink satellite and we put an iPhone in one of the chase planes. And we just streamed it down to our setup, and it was beautiful 1080p lagless video. And I could not believe it. It was a weekend gig, and it was probably the coolest looking live stream I've ever done. And that's more on the big end of it. And then some more DIY stuff. You know, I had one client that wanted her own streaming show. She was really interested in, you know, her career was around space, and she just wanted a fun talk show, engaging show, sort of like almost like The Daily Show, but about space. And we literally just set up a camera, some lighting, a microphone, and a green screen in her garage. And we live streamed it, and we got all the graphics in ahead of time, and we made a live TV show out of this client's garage, and it looked really nice. So there's a huge array of content that I've created in more of the DIY space. I've been going more in the YouTube direction lately. One client I have currently is New Rock Stars on YouTube. If you're familiar with them, they are well known for the YouTube thumbnails of Thanos, and it says, "What was he cooking?" and stuff like that. Yeah, that's what they're really well known for, those kind of memeable thumbnails. But they do it's a lot of nerd content like Marvel and DC and Star Wars, and they deep dive into those. And they have a talk show called The Break Room that I, when they need me, normally they have an in-house person, but a lot of times they'll need me to come in and I'll help them with their engineering and cutting the show. and helping them improve the look of everything, helping them optimize stuff. So it's been a lot more YouTube, Twitch streaming content lately, just because there is not a lot of studio opportunities. So I think there's so many of us that want to make TV and want to make shows, but there's no big opportunities with studios. So we're saying, screw it, we're going to make our own stuff. And it's been really, really good, really good, valuable experience and really enjoyable stuff to make.
You say there's a lot less like studio. Are we talking kind of like legacy media company type stuff in terms of studio jobs? And then why is it moving to like Atlanta and Ireland? I'm actually not familiar with that.
So let's say like, let's use like CBS as an example, right? Let's just, mm-hmm. they're not like just them as an example. Let's say that they have like game shows, like they're trying to pitch a new game show and it's like one versus 100. And obviously we like have heard of that, but they're like, oh, we're pitching a new game show. I think it's been a combination of multiple factors since COVID, the massive wealth shift to, you know, billionaires and stuff like that. There's not as much budget to pay people who don't make millions an hour. And then also post strikes with the writer strikes, and all those, you know, industry-wide strikes. I think there's been sort of a, I don't want to call it a retaliation because it feels a little pointed, but there's been some retaliatory shifting of things. You know, I'm working my way to get into the union. So I'm a union guy. I'm going to be on the sides of the unions, but I don't think they want to pay union rates, which I think are livable and fair wages and benefits and all that. So it is now cheaper for them at this point in time with, you know, how expensive things in America are getting, for them to fly every American contestant that they want on the show to Ireland, put them up in a hotel room, and then hire cheap Irish labor, which, you know, not to say that, you know, the Irish aren't excellent workers as well. But,
damn
but,
right.
Yeah. But it's like, you know, they don't need to pay as much. You know, things are, you know, more affordable over there. So it is literally cheaper for them to fly half the people to Ireland and get, you know, cheap rental space there than it is to have, you know, studio space here in Los Angeles and pay union wages, which, you know, I think are fair wages. So that's a lot of it.
Wow.
That's a big shift in the industry. So there's just, it's a combination of that, them moving things to cheaper places. And then also, I think we are coming out of sort of the green light frenzy that we've been in the last 10 years of streaming companies and tech companies trying to build their libraries and
spending more money than they have just to have a library and seeing what sticks. Yeah.
Yeah. And now they have those libraries and maybe the investment wasn't as good as they thought. So they're pulling back on the green light frenzy. So now if you notice, there's really not a lot of new television coming out right now, whether it's scripted or unscripted. It's kind of a slow point. So there's just so many factors just contributing to just there's not a lot of things being made by major studios and companies right now.
My co-host and I talked about this a little bit in a couple previous episodes where we're noticing that seasons of our TV shows are getting shorter and shorter.
Right.
And it's like, you know, it's like, do you want to make the same amount for cheap or do you want to like pay the same, like have the same quality, but less episodes to put out?
Sure.
My next question was going to be, what's the most challenging type of broadcast you worked on? But unless it seems like the answer was working the news in Blizzard days.
That's one of them. And I remember for the longest time, I don't know if it was like self-confidence or like imposter syndrome, or I always told myself that I will never have a job harder than that first job out of college. And I think it sort of stopped me from growing skill-wise for a while, just like mentally. And recently, my most exciting gig recently was I worked on the Kentucky Derby. I was there, I flew out to Kentucky and I was there technical directing for the company FanDuel, their coverage of the Kentucky Derby. It was a lot
That's
of,
big.
You know, yeah, it was a lot of analysis and interviews, segments and stuff like that. So it was very exciting and it was incredibly challenging, but I think I did a great job. And then afterwards, or, you know, maybe about like 3/4 of the way through the 2 weeks I was there, I finally realized, I was like, this is the hardest job I've ever had, but I'm significantly more skilled, so I can handle it now. Like, a big reason of why those jobs were so hard when I was young is because I was young and I was inexperienced. And, you know, they were challenging and they would still be challenging to this day, but I have 10 years of experience at this point. So I'm like, yeah, this is incredibly hard. I'm also incredibly good at my job. So it just, you know, things that are incredibly challenging just don't feel as daunting anymore because I'm significantly more confident in my skill set and abilities.
Was the Kentucky Derby like the largest like camera setup you've ever had to work with?
It was almost not necessarily, I would say, because we were, it's like you watch an NFL game, right? And
yeah.
The NFL game is either broadcast by like Fox or like one of those major networks, but ESPN is there and they're getting interviews. They're doing analysis from their own studio. It's just, you don't normally watch an NFL game on ESPN, right? So FanDuel
Unless it's Monday night.
Unless it's Monday night. So FanDuel is kind of like that, where we weren't the ones that you were going to watch the Kentucky Derby on, because NBC has that. But you can tune into us for analysis. You could tune into us for, you know, interviews and extra content. So a lot of the cameras were feeds from other, from the track itself. Some of them were for NBC, and it was definitely a lot of cameras, but the most I've ever had is at Santa Anita Park because it's all of our own cameras. So that one I have like 30.
Wow.
And yeah, so that, and they're all our cameras. Like, I have, like, you know, we don't have 30 camera operators, but, you know, the engineer, you know, because a lot of them are stationary, but I'm the director of those 30 cameras, and those 30 cameras, like, I have like say on, like, you know, the framing of them and where they're going to be. So Santa Anita, which is like my day job, horse racing is probably still to this day the most cameras I work with.
And I'll confess that I know a little bit about some of this because when I was in undergrad, I took a class in TV broadcasting where we had like a 3-camera setup in like a tiny studio, you know, just for educational purposes. And I remember my teacher saying, and I might have gotten the numbers fudged in my head, but it's like, oh, for a normal NFL game, there's like 40 or 50 cameras, but then the Super Bowl, there's like 96.
I believe it.
And I'm just thinking, like, would you call it the studio kind of, or the control room, I should say. The control room, you know, you have like, I remember the like 3 monitors, and that's how you knew which camera is which, but you're dealing like, it blows my mind, you know, with you and when I watch sports on TV, it's like, how do they keep track? How are they able to keep track of every single one of those screens at once?
Yeah, it's a lot of work because, you know, as you said, it's like, oh, like 3 monitors, 3 cameras. I'm used to like maybe a 2x4 row of big 4K televisions. And each one of those 4K televisions has a 4x4 grid of cameras. So there's 8 total giant 4K monitors, and each one of those monitors has 16 sources on them. Now, a lot of them are duplicated, like maybe the left half of the room is a copy of the right half of the room. But yeah, you do, it can get really overwhelming. So you gotta, it's a job where you really need to be organized and be like, all right, if I'm only gonna use this camera once, I'm gonna put it all the way up there in the corner and keep my main cameras directly in front of me. It does take a lot of organization.
Is there any artistry in your work as would the artistry be more like the technical director who carries out the directions of the director, or would it be the director to kind of who would have the opportunity to be like, hey, can you do a shot like this, or can we cut this sort of way?
Yeah, I think it depends on the environment. Like, if we're in an environment where I'm the technical director and there is a show caller director like calling the shots, usually the look of the show would fall to them and they would have final say. And in that environment, I'm usually, just pressing the buttons. And if they make a wrong call, I will press the correct button and save their lives and they will thank me forever. But, if you're working with a good director, I a lot of times will kind of like, we will kind of call it like selling the director a shot, kind of, where if I have some downtime, I'll build a double box really quickly and put, the desk on the left-hand side and the reporter on the right-hand side. And maybe they weren't thinking of going to a double box, but I'll have the idea of like, oh, a double box would look good. Maybe they forgot they had that as an option. So I will build that real quick, put it in their preview monitor, and then they'll see that and they'll say like, oh, good call, cut to that. And then they'll cut to the double box. So I, when I am the technical director working with the director, I really try to, be humble and not try to overstep or anything. Like, I'm just like, at the end of the day, whatever the director says is what I'm going to cut to. But I try to sneak little flares of creativity of like, here's what I would go to. And they could ignore it and just say that they want to go to the camera full, and that's totally fine. But, I try to sneak in little subtle opinions where I can.
I have a question here that says, what's one broadcast you've been most proud of? But I'm assuming it's that it would be like the jet one you were talking about.
Yeah, that one is crazy. And I wasn't really like a main engineer on that. My friend Jared, like him, it was like sort of his brainchild and everything like that. But I just the team as a whole really came together and just made it happen. Like, we had multiple engineers, and even in that context, we had a mini control room. My main duty while we were live was I was working teleprompter, but my friend hired me because he knew I was a broadcast engineer, and he was like, listen, I don't have more money for a broadcast engineer, but I do have the budget for a teleprompter. So can you get on the show, do a teleprompter where we're live? But honestly, what I'm going to need your help with most is like engineering this stuff and like running cables and blah, 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 like that. And I'm like, yeah, sure, you got it. In my mind, I know that my job at the end of the day is to do the teleprompter, but I'm also like, having a hand in engineering and helping him like brainstorm the best, tech solutions to these things. But that one, that whole team, camera people, engineers, it looked amazing. It is definitely the most cinematic thing I've been a part of.
That sounds awesome. Is there any way to watch it?
Oh
You
yeah,
know.
no, I have links to as many things as I can get available. Just for my portfolio, I have them all on my LinkedIn as sort of like the closest thing to my reel right now. I'm working on a website, mattprince.tv, when it is ready. So I'm working on fleshing that out. But yeah, no, most of my best live streams that I've been a part of are on my LinkedIn and are available to view for, anyone who wants to and anyone who maybe wants to hire me.
I was wondering if there was like a YouTube channel publicly that people could go to check out. But I guess your website when it's ready will show off some of your work with
Yeah,
the
if you want to watch the clips of the stream or the jet, let me find it real quick. So the company is called Boom Supersonic. That is who was our client. And they've made videos. I'm trying to find the one that is Okay, so when you go to Boom Supersonic on YouTube, they have live streams, and we did two of them. We did XB1, which is the jet's name, first supersonic flight, and then we did the second supersonic flight. Yeah, and those did really well. The first one has, like 840,000 views right
That's pretty
now,
good.
and it didn't even have that much when we first live streamed, so people are still watching it, and it was just incredibly cinematic. So both those are just, a real good team came together and made those, and it's something that we're all very proud of.
In your job, have there been any like mistakes or snafus that occurred live in your work, that I suppose makes for a funny story.
It happens all the time. My goal is, if there's ever a mistake, what I've learned is like, as long as the audience can't tell there was a mistake, then it wasn't a mistake. Because if they like, oh, I'll cut to the wrong camera, quote unquote, but as long as I don't cut to like color bars, then they, are just gonna assume that that's like what I wanted to do. So as long as I don't cut to it real quick, then it's fine. Although I do remember in one of my first years at my first job in Boston, I do remember being on air, and apparently one of the talent had gone to the bathroom and there didn't tell anyone, and their mic was still on, and we're in the middle of a really intense story, and then all you hear is a toilet flush. And that's significantly more common than you would think. You might, I'm sure there's like super cuts of stuff like that
Oh, I've
online,
watched
but
them. Yeah, like news
oh,
bloopers. Yeah.
yeah. But if you do that stuff every single day, you're gonna like see it all the time. So that's the first one that comes to mind.
Reminds me of like a time I was in high school theater, and I was at like in a it was like an award ceremony, but it was an award ceremony that had like performances, kind of like the Tonys, but like for high schoolers in a
Right.
region. And the performers that like I think were gonna go on next. No, they had just gone off, and they still had their mics on, and so like someone else was performing. They were like performing a scene from Pride and Prejudice, and there was all sorts of ridiculous chatter from backstage that we heard that made the audience like roar with laughter, and we all stood up and applaused when it was over, mainly just because the Pride and Prejudice actors kept it together the whole time.
Yeah.
So it's like, thank you for persevering through our inappropriate laughter, but yeah.
That's funny.
One thing I was always curious with like sports broadcasting is with live sport broadcasting is how do sport instant replays work? Because I always think like I'm always grateful when they happen, especially when like a baseball play happens and I'm wondering like, whoa, what how did that happen? And I want to see that again. And just like how did they get that clip so quickly?
Replay operators, that is an entire career, and they are some of the most skilled people I have ever seen. I do a lot of work at Spectrum Sportsnet, and those replay operators, it's as you said, these replays happen so fast. The director does not even have time to say, get that clip, or I want a replay of that. The replay operator, usually they are or become incredibly familiar with the game. Like, let's say it's baseball. They become incredibly familiar in the game. They know what was good. They know what was impressive. They know what the audience wants to see. And they will just lightning speed take that replay. And it's basically a replay machine that is recording constantly. And you have a little jog wheel that lets you, like, reverse it and stuff like that. So something amazing will happen, like whether it's like a pop fly or I don't know, like a home run or something. They'll see it happen in real time. They'll take the jog wheel. They'll go back to it. They'll go to the start of the clip. They'll press in. They'll go to the end of the clip. They'll press out. They'll export that really, really quickly to the playout machine. And they'll just tell the director, like, got it. And then we, have all worked together for so long. The director just knows, like, that is a replay of the home run. I'm going to go to it. I'm going to trust this person that it looks good. And it's not just like, a replay of someone dropping their hot dog. It's a lot of trust. It is a lot of skill. And yeah, no, replay operators in high speed sports broadcasting environment is some of the most skill I've ever seen.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's crazy. It is with so little direction, you just do it and you just say, got it. And yeah, it's wild.
So that I guess that kind of covers a lot of my questions on the broadcasting in general, but you're also on Twitch. How
Yep.
did that happen?
COVID. I always wanted to make content. Like, I was the film kid in middle school and high school. I was the kid at the video camera. I was the kid at the YouTube channel, always making like movies with my friends. And it was, fun. Like, some things got like, a good amount of views for like 2009 or whatever. But I always tried to make Pokemon content, and the technology and, my budget as a kid, just wasn't there. I didn't have like capture cards. I didn't have equipment to like bring to either like emulate the Pokemon games or to capture my own gameplay and record it. It's just the technology was not there in the early 2010s. So I could never do it. I always tried to. Sometimes I would just film my DS and just like talk over it. And I would post a couple of those things, and it just never really went anywhere. But COVID happened. We, for the first time in our lives, were all being taken care of by the government effectively. And I, had a little bit of money saved up and a lot of downtime. And I was just like, if there's ever a time to do this, it's now. So I built a really nice PC. I bought some, basic, very, very basic equipment. And I just started making videos because I had time to do so. It was a fun hobby. It was a fun way to like feel productive, during early COVID and quarantine. And no, I'm proud of a lot of the things I made. It's definitely a slow grind. It's something that's hard to do when you have a full-time job and you have a lot of freelance gigs and you have like, you want to support your family and stuff like that. But no, I have like, just under like 3,000 on YouTube right now. Make like, it's like a couple hundred bucks a year. So it's not a lot, but it's something that I am passionate about. I put time into when I can, and I think it still has the ability to pop off someday. I think the content and the quality, and hopefully my personality, is there, all to make something that people would like to enjoy and watch.
And can I ask real quick? We're recording this on Zoom, and your background, your image is what people see if you go if you go on his Twitch channel. It's like it's this frame, and in the background you have this blue and magenta lighting that a lot of YouTubers and Twitch streamers have, known colloquially online as bisexual lighting.
Oh
What?
yeah.
Why is that the definitive look for online streamers and a lot of YouTubers? Why is that?
I don't know. It's like a lot of people like colors and like, they sort of have like color palettes and stuff like that they go to. I sort of settled on light blue, blue and purple and pinks. Because I wanted to evoke chill. Like, I didn't want it to be too masculine because that's kind of not the audience I really want to build. That's not to be like, men, stay away, because obviously like I'm a man. But it's just like I just wanted it to be a chill, welcoming, not too serious environment. And as you said, the bisexual lighting, which I do identify as bisexual, so it works out that way. But yeah, I don't know. I just wanted it to be chill, communicate chill. Non-threatening, cool, like this is a safe space. Like I'm not like too manly to have pinks and stuff like that. So like you immediately communicates like this is a man who doesn't take himself too seriously, and it's hopefully communicates a safe space right away.
Did you have to do research to figure that out, or did you just kind of base that on like what other people are doing and how that look made you feel?
I always liked, like, especially like in the 2010s, like mid 2010s, I always liked kind of like the vaporwave aesthetic, like that sort of like wave that like went over culture and design and stuff like that. And I've kind of just stuck with it since. I feel like that was like kind of the look when I first started having an adult online presence in college, and I just kind of just evolved it over time. It's when I became sentient as an adult, that's what was popular. So I just kind of stuck with it and like developed it over time.
I remember, and I say I remember like I'm uniquely old, but I don't know. I think you might actually be older than me. So you would remember this too, just sort of when YouTube decided that short videos that it wasn't just going to be short videos anymore. They're going to have long videos, and live streaming was a thing. And then there was YouTube live streaming, and then I started hearing about this thing called Twitch, and then I think Discord is also like a live streaming thing. What is I'm clearly not as well versed on this, but what is sort of the difference between these three platforms now? Why do one versus the others?
Like, are you talking about specifically in a live streaming environment or for any content creation?
Yeah, like any content creation, like I mean, obviously YouTube is kind of like for every kind of video, but for your specific work, I mean, you could do this on YouTube, but you do this on Twitch. And so, what is it about Twitch that makes it different from YouTube or other live streaming platforms that are out now?
I would say for my kind of content, which is gaming and gaming clips and stuff like that, the three biggest that I invest in are YouTube, Twitch, and TikTok. I would say each platform has kind of, styles that work better on them. YouTube is still the king for evergreen content, informative content. Like if you want to make like a guide to a game or a long form video, you are still going to find the most success on YouTube. And I live stream on YouTube sometimes. It's not as plug and play as Twitch. Twitch, the difference with between that and Twitch is harder to grow. It is significantly less discoverability. But when you get a viewer base on there, they're usually significantly more loyal. Like you are going to build a community on Twitch. There's a lot more of what's the word I'm looking for? There's a lot more customization on Twitch. Like you can have like your own like emotes, and you can do that on YouTube, but there's just a lot more variety and flexibility on Twitch. So if you're trying to specifically game and stream and interact with people and interact with viewers, I feel like Twitch, at least for your horizontal content, that's still going to be the best. And now TikTok is trying to get in on that. And it's been showcasing itself as a major player here in live streaming. Obviously, with TikTok, if you've been on it, it's mostly vertical content. So the streaming landscape there is a lot more vertical content, which can be a little tricky to, get a wide stream game into vertical content. But, there's ways to do it and there is an audience there. But it is still, I feel, in like the infancy of what its what's potential of its potential there and as a place to grow. So those are the three that I invest in the most. I put a little bit on Instagram, but Instagram it has its other niches that do better on it, and gaming is not the number one. So I'll post stuff on there just for, doesn't cost me anything and it doesn't take too much extra time. So I'll post stuff on there. But yeah, definitely the order that I'm investing in is YouTube number one, big time, because then I can, live stream a long form video, cut it down a little bit, and then post that long form video edited, and then I basically get eyes on my content twice. So that's the strategy. And then Twitch and TikTok, I would say equally, maybe TikTok a little bit more, because I don't just do Pokemon on there.
Has TikTok been difficult given the federal government's attempt to like ban it, but then Trump is like, well, push the ban back because I can make this work for me.
I feel like, yeah, I feel like that's all like smoke and mirrors. It feels like very much like the stereotypical evil character that creates a problem and then comes to everyone with the solution and is like, look, I fixed the problem. And it's like, no one knows that he made the problem. So it does feel like a problem was created for him to fix and be the hero to people under 30. And I just don't know if he got credit for that in the way that he wanted, and I don't care. But it felt like a lot of smoke and mirrors.
Would you describe yourself as a Let's player, or is that term outdated?
It's I try never to like put myself into too much of a box with content. I've always sold my channel as I'm gonna make whatever I want to make, and if you have fun, then you can watch it, and if you don't, I don't care. So that's always been my vibe. It truly, my channel is wherever ADHD takes me is what I'm gonna make. So if I'm making battling videos and team, construction videos, I'm gonna do that. If I decide that I'm really into the cards and I want to make videos about the cards, it's gonna be that for a while. And it's just always, you never know what you're gonna get, and it's always just gonna be Pokemon is always the most likely thing you are going to see. And even then, there's still a chance of some other Nintendo games or some non-Nintendo games or just probably not non-gaming things. I probably start a new channel for that. But there's always a chance that different games are going to come in there.
And just to point out, you have Pokemon plushies behind you. I see a
Oh, yeah.
Pikachu. I see. Well, this is where I admit I'm not that well versed on Pokemon. I'm assuming all of those are
Well,
Pokemon.
half of them are Pokemon, and then two of them are my wife's BTS plushies. It is their they have their own like character line similar to like Sanrio characters for merch, and those are
Oh,
two of
nice.
them. So I, you know, she contributed that.
So for the Sweet Boy Matt 3 channel, you intend to be mostly on games, and your personal focus is Nintendo. At first glance on your Twitch channel, there's like a lot of Pokemon, a little bit of Zelda, and that's kind of like what your niche is at the moment.
Yeah, definitely Pokemon is the biggest thing. Every once in a while there might be some, non-Pokemon Nintendo games, and every once in a while there might be a non-Nintendo game at all, but yeah, the 95% of it is gonna be Pokemon. And the idea is just to like make content for the competitive half of Pokemon without being sweaty. Like I just want to like make content that is like, hey, like I tested out this Pokemon, like maybe I'll give you some inspiration for something you can try if you want to play competitively, but I'm also not taking this super seriously and this is mostly just for laughs. So maybe you'll even just like watch me be really bad at this. And maybe that's what you enjoy and maybe that's why. But whether you get laughing at me or laughing with me and getting inspired by me, then that is what I hope. Whatever you gain from it is great.
What is like the most broadly popular type of gaming that is on Twitch right now that you're either competing against or trying to counter program for your niche?
It's like Pokemon is popular, and there's a lot of creators who do it. We're kind of in like a lull right now because we're in between games. Normally, there's been a Pokemon game every year, which was a little too much. But in the last few 5 years or so, they've been slowing it down, which thank God they were doing too much, and I want the quality to be higher. So we're kind of in a lull before a new game comes out in October. So things are a little slow right now. Yeah, like a lot of popular Pokemon things. I would say probably the most popular Pokemon thing is shiny hunting, which is mostly populated by, women and women identifying streamers. And I'm like, how do I say this in the, because it is not meant to sound incel sounding at all, but I am not a pretty girl. And there is, there's like there's benefits and there's things working against you by doing that. Absolutely, by like, being a pretty girl. Absolutely. But, they tend to like people like watching pretty girls do stuff, good for them. That's awesome. But, I am a man with a receding hairline and graying beard, so I'm naturally not going to get the same audience as pretty girls do. And that's okay. That's totally okay. The one place in life where I don't have an advantage as a man, the one place, everything else very privileged.
Is there a skill set to being a good game streamer, and is this something a person could develop, or is this something you either have or you don't?
I think anyone can do it. I definitely think there's skills that you need to have, and one of them is just not taking yourself too seriously and just not getting in your own head. Because so much of it when you start, the vast majority of it when you start, is going to be you talking to yourself. And you're going to be there and you're not going to have any viewers. And you need to be okay with that. Like, you need to be okay that this isn't going to blow up, that there's a 90% chance that you don't become uber successful. And you need to have fun doing it by yourself and talking to no one. And then eventually you'll find your audience. People will find you and maybe you'll interact with them on your stream and maybe they'll stick around and maybe they'll follow your like content on multiple platforms. They'll, stick around for what you make and maybe you'll have like an early fan. I've made friends online that way. You know, one of my biggest collaborators that I do, you know, collaborative content with, I had some downtime at work the other day, or you know, years ago, and I was just like, let me like look at like what people who have a tiny bit more success than me, like what are they doing? Like, let me like look up other people. And I found this one guy, Quinn. He was streaming to like, I don't know, maybe like a dozen people or so. And I jumped in and I started talking, and you know, we had like a, he was responding to my content, my comments, and I was, you know, thinking that he was funny. So I followed him. I was in the next few streams, like commenting, and now we're friends online. We've made content together. And now I was like one of the first people that was on his stream. And now he's huge. Now he has like 300,000 subscribers on YouTube. Like, it's his full-time job. But I caught him when he only had a few people watching, and I was one of those few people. So, you know, I found a lot of success in being the viewer for other people's streams that I would want in my own stream. Cause then you're, you know, making a community. So I was just like, all right, like I wish people would engage with my stuff. I'm going to engage with other people's stuff who is like, you know, a comparable size to me. We become friends. We make content together. We help each other grow. But yeah, I would say a skill. You gotta be good at yapping. You gotta be good at talking to yourself. You gotta be good at, you know, entertaining an audience of zero, because that's what a big majority of it is going to be at first. And maybe it becomes something, maybe it doesn't. But if you're not having fun with it, people can tell and they won't watch you. So you just need to be able to have fun. You just need to have fun not succeeding at it. And that's okay. You know, not succeeding in like a monetary or like growing way. Just like if you had fun talking to no one and playing your game, maybe one person popped in. Yeah, you just if you're not having fun, then don't do it, you know?
Is there like a pressure to make sure there's no dead air like while you're playing your game? Cuz I've like, you know, I play video games by myself a lot, and like I almost never talk.
Yeah, you just sit alone and on your couch just like, "All right, I'm going to go there now." Kind of naturally like that. I kind of do like narrate a lot of what I'm doing kind of naturally. When I'm alone, so it kind of works out. But yeah, there's pressure to not have dead air, and I won't lie and say that I'm good at that. Like sometimes I probably go in the direction of talking too much. And you know what the funniest comment I ever got on it comes in that realm. This is the best comment I ever got. I'm going to pull it up on my, because I have it screen capped. I'm going to pull it up. And this is on my YouTube channel, which is like just, you know, a video on demand of like one of my streams, like a cut down stream. And this person says, "This channel just isn't for me. You are great at battling and a respectable player. However, your YouTube personality is so annoying. I just can't get over it to enjoy the battles. Keep up the great work. I hope your channel pops off. Good luck to you, sir." And it was just so, it was so matter of fact. I was cackling because they were like, "You are so annoying. Not for me. I still wish you success. No ill will." And then all I responded was, "OMG, I love this comment so much because I'm aware I'm annoying, but cannot believe someone thinks I'm good at battling. Thank you, pal. Heart." And it was just so funny to me. Like, what compels someone to say that?
And the
so
fact that
funny.
It needed, because I think most of us kind of think that maybe we watch a video, we find a random video and we decide we don't like it. And we're like, sure. I'm not really interested in the YouTuber. But that doesn't mean we wish ill will of that person. We're like,
most of the time you just move on.
Yeah. If they're doing fine, all right, good for them. Not my thing, but good for them.
Yeah. for this person to be like, "I personally find your personality grating, but I think you still deserve success. I'm going to comment on your video, put it in the algorithm, and hopefully other people enjoy you, good sir." I couldn't believe it. I was like, I'm annoying, but at least I'm not communicating bad person. So I guess I'll take that.
Something that clicked in my head is like, because I was thinking about like, you know, you got to be good at talking, you got to be or yapping, as you say, and keeping the air alive. Is it kind of, would you say that your skill set is sort of being a game streamer like that, is it comparable to being like a play-by-play sports commentator? Because those guys have to keep talking. And
yeah. I definitely think there's comparable stuff to it, and then and then on top of that, there is a big, if you look at like data on how people are viewing content, there's a lot of people who will watch long form YouTube and kind of just listen to it in the background while they're doing other tasks. So,
Guilty.
you know, yeah, and me too. So I'll play competitive Pokemon games, whether it be, you know, on the Switch or on the mobile versions, and I will find myself kind of commenting through it or commentating through it like I'm like a sports commentator or analysis, you know, person. I'll be like, all right, this person, you know, has Mewtwo. You know, I know that Mewtwo is fast, but I think that if I use this move, I can outspeed it. They also have the opportunity to do this, and maybe I can outprotect predict them, you know. So I kind of, and it helps me to talk through my thought process out loud. So I just try to say everything I'm thinking out loud, all the possibilities of what the other player can do, and I find that that makes engaging content. So yeah, no, I do think it is pretty comparable to sports commentating. Like you kind of have to, if there is dead air, because there's a lot of times where, you know, I'm choosing my Pokemon's move, the opponents are choosing their Pokemon's move. Nothing's really happening in the game. If I don't talk, it's pretty much nothing to watch. So I kind of need to like talk through. All right, I think this is the best move. My opponent could do this. Maybe I should try to counter with this or predict their next move. So yeah, I would compare a skill set to sports commentating. I would say there's a lot of overlap there.
And actually, you said it's like being a play-by-play or a color commentator because you're also talking like background and stuff. So in a way, you're kind of like I don't know how well you know Dodger baseball, but you're kind of like Vin Scully, you know?
Yeah. May he rest in
Because he didn't
peace.
have a color commentator. I remember when he was doing broadcasting, it was just him, and he'd tell a little story about the time he saw a great catch by Willie Mays, and that is strike two. And then continues with the
And
story.
it's really interesting because I like baseball, but like, you know, there is a lot of dead air in baseball. So it's to have someone like that who is engaging to just listen to, especially because, you know, I'm sure a lot of people still listen to it on the radio, baseball. Yeah, no, I think that, you know, is what made him one of the greats and is what makes, you know, Dodger fans love him and remember him so fondly, is his ability to do that and his ability to focus on the game while also having other engaging things to say, which I do think is a skill set that can make you really good at live streaming a game or whatever else you're live streaming.
Does politics ever play a role at all in what you do in any way, whether it's with being a Twitch streamer or being a broadcast director?
Sure. I would say as a streamer, it definitely comes up just because you're putting yourself out there on social media and making content, which, you know, that inherently invites people to critique and to say things. And a lot of times, you know, on these social media things, you get, you know, comments that aren't the nicest in the world. And, you know, me as like a white, straight presenting dude, I normally avoid those, but there are a lot of people who, you know, identify differently than me, look differently than me, that get a lot more. So I don't normally get that, but I make a point to, in my spaces, in a space that's like a community, you know, people can consider a community, whether it's my YouTube comments or my live stream or my Discord channel, it is a no tolerance for hatred space. Like this is an accepting space. This is a safe space. I have no desire to sort of be a blank slate. So I appeal to like, oh, I want to appeal to conservative fans too. I don't. I if you if we aren't on the same wavelength of, you know, everyone regardless of their identity or race or sexuality, if you don't agree that everyone deserves to exist and be happy and healthy, you don't need to be in this space. And this space is very, very forwardly and vocally not for you. So yeah, I try to be very, very forward about like we I don't mess with that here. I have no desire to be like, oh, like keep politics out of it so I can, you know, cultivate a more like widespread fan base. I don't care. Like, this is a safe space. This is a queer space. I'll talk about being queer on it. I don't care if that bothers you. I don't care if that makes you not want to watch me. Not my problem. I would rather grow a space and be less palatable to everyone and maybe have lesser growth because of it than be just widespread palatable to everyone and not, you know, cultivate a safe space and you know, use my platform, you know, when I have one for good and to talk about issues that matter to me. And yeah, creating a safe space for people of all identities matters to me. So that's how I would say it affects you as a streamer or how politics come in. Like, yeah, I just, yeah, this will never be not, it will never not be a safe space. And I will never let go of that regardless of how big I am. I don't care. So if I ever sell out and I'm ever like a right-wing grifter, which will never happen, but if I ever do it, you can come back to this and be like, damn, what happened? But it'll never happen. And then in my career in like more engineering and broadcast, yeah, there has definitely been points where politics has come into it, and I've had to decide, okay, like, you know, in television, there's a lot of different genres and a lot of different viewpoints that are being expressed. Do I have, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Do I have like a line in the sand that I won't do? Like, are there gigs that I will not accept because of politics? And yeah, there are. I as a broadcast engineer, have no interest in, like, my hard line is I won't work at Fox News and I won't work on any broadcast that is directly advertising or like politically like stumping for a Republican or a right-wing politician. Like, I won't do it. I will never work on a broadcast of like a Trump rally. I will never do anything that is actively selling you a politician that I think, you know, is selling hatred. I won't do it. So yeah, and luckily I've been in, you know, mostly either politically neutral or left-leaning spaces, as far as my career goes and what I've worked on. So I haven't had to turn down any gigs because of politics, but I won't do it. So yeah, that's like where my hard line is.
Do you ever think about your work as a streamer and a broadcast director when you go to the pool, when not pool, polls? Do you ever think, how will this election affect my career?
Yeah, sure. A big thing that I'm really working towards, a goal I have right now is being a card carrying union member of, you know, IATSE, the Television Engineers and Editors Guild, which is technically what technical director falls under the Editors Guild of IATSE. And I've been in a union before. I believe in unions. I think that they are a safety net for workers. I think bargaining power and collective bargaining power and, you know, working together like that is an amazing way for the lower class to, you know, have power in the workspace. So yeah, left-leaning politicians tend to be a lot better with unions. So I do always look at what a politician's stance is on unions, how they're going to work with the unions. Do my unions and other ones that I work with endorse this person? So yeah, no, my career is affected by politics a lot, a big part of it being the unions that I am working really hard to be a part of. Yeah, so that's a big thing that I look for when going to the polls, yeah.
Are there, what are your socials and handles that you'd like to drop?
Oh yeah, totally. On everything for social, it's going to be Sweet Boy Matt 3. It's the number 3. On TikTok, I think I managed to get it without the 3. But I am like in the DMs of the people who own the other Sweet Boy Matt without the 3 handles on various things, trying to buy it off them. So I'm trying to do it before I get too big, and they're like, oh, now you're big, you can afford more. So I might buy the Twitch handle soon, see if the kid doesn't scam me. I think he's like 19. But so hopefully at some point it'll be Sweet Boy Matt without the three. But for now it's Sweet Boy Matt with the three. I think on TikTok it's without the three. But that's where you're gonna find me. Look forward to my upcoming website for more career based stuff. That is gonna be more a portfolio for my broadcast engineering stuff. It's gonna be mattprince.tv. I'm working on getting that together. You could maybe listen to this in a year and I still will not have gotten it together. ADHD is crazy. But that's where you can find me.
Thanks for being on the show, and good luck to you.
Yeah, thanks, Travis. It was a lot of fun.
Know what's cool? You see, he was saying during the interview that he worked at the Santa Anita racetrack a lot, right? I
Yes.
had been there. That's where the In-N-Out Company picnic's at.
That's right.
Yeah, and so what's
I've been there
crazy
once.
when I realized that, and he was saying like how many cameras he works with. I'm like, oh yeah, no, because that's a huge facility, not just the
Yes.
track. That's a huge ass facility.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, oh my God, you're covering all that ground?
Yeah.
Like, that's a big
Now
place.
just imagine the Super Bowl, which not only has like the game coverage, it's also got the halftime show, so you need like cameras just for that.
Not only that, it also has the sidelines, the hallway, the fans, and then also too, you got everything up in the booths. So no, yes, Santa Anita alone, because Santa Anita has some underground parts. So just thinking of the Super Bowl, like you guys were talking, I'm like, that's a lot. That's insane, and it's live.
Yeah. And something that I thought about was when Matt talked about on his Twitch channel, like he is very upfront about what he believes, and that, they're people of certain really bad political positions that he does not want his channel to be welcome to, where he's like, no, you're not welcome to comment mean, bigoted, hateful things on my channel. And I thought that interesting. It's like, the nature of the internet kind of gives you the freedom to do that.
Because you have no stockholders to behold to. That's what
Exactly.
it comes down to.
And you're not, and it's like he's cultivating his audience. He's not trying to go for like the audience as kind of mainstream media views it.
Well, like it was saying how it's now all about DIY and like building it your own. It's like, well, for the past, let's say, 15 years, when you got on, let's just say YouTube, for example, the first one, you were open to the world. But then you got to really narrow yourself to what you were really going for. And then when it's like, Twitch and even Snapchat came up, you can really control not just everything on your own, but it's like you can control like, no, I know who I want watching. And the whole point of it, like, that's the point. Like you have that, you when it comes to art, you want that much control where it's not about how you put out, how much you put out, what you put out, it's who you're putting it out for and to. And that's awesome. And that's what you want. So it's cool to have that he has that controller. It's like this, no, you're not allowed here. Bye. And here's the thing, that's the point of all this shit. And it's crazy too, where it's like, and if people get mad about like, well, that's kind of messed up, it's like, well, it got to that point because again, there's no studio work because everything's out of state or country. And the problem with that is that, for example, he was saying Ireland, because Game of Thrones did that a lot.
Oh yeah, they shot around
It's
Belfast a
fucked up
lot.
because, for some reason, still since what, the 1800s, it doesn't depend on what your skin tone is. It's your nationality that determines your price hike. Your price. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's not even race anymore. It's like, oh, what country are you from? That'll determine
Yeah.
how much I'm paying you.
It is race. It's a race to the bottom.
Fucking crazy. Yeah, it's stupid. But yeah, I know, yeah, Rob Lowe's, I think one of his game shows is all filmed in Ireland, and they literally ship over 100 contestants there, and it's like cheaper, like by apparently like a crazy margin. Not like, oh, we're saving a few thousand, but it's like, no, we're saving millions.
That's just,
It's just fucked up.
it's a, de
It's just fucked up.
the times are a changing, as Bob Dylan says.
I know, and we don't get a fun montage like in Watchmen.
No. Well, it was a sad montage. We'll get the sad
Well, it got
montage.
sad at the end when we found out who
That's
shot JFK. It was fun at the beginning. The
what
montage was fun at the
it was a
beginning.
very it was tragic by nature. And that's what we're in.
No, dude, that was another great interview. Thanks for that.
You're
Thank you for
welcome.
bringing that to us. That was awesome.
Yeah.
Everyone, I hope you enjoy. Travis is just killing these interviews right now.
Thanks, Tom.
You're welcome, man. All righty. Well, we hope you all enjoy us. You said we're on Patreon now, correct?
We are on Patreon.
Gosh darn, that's awesome. We're moving up. Just enough money to get in and out, folks. That's all we want right now. That's all we want. I'm going to keep saying that because once we get In-N-Out money, then I'm going to say Lucille's money.
Yeah. And then I'm going to say, much to Angel's chagrin,
I need to say that. And you're going to
say steakhouse money. and then the bear money.
The bear. Exactly. Patty's Place, here we come in Seal Beach. Alrighty, folks, we hope you enjoy again. We love what we're doing, and we're going to keep busting out more interviews and more just different stuff as we grow. Good afternoon, good evening, good night.
Bye, everyone.